We kick off hour number two, Friday edition of Three and Out. Going to go to the Nextdoor Home Group hotline. You can find out all their listings at nextdoorhomes.com. It's Eli Corelman, his group over at Keller Williams. They're top 5% in the Knoxville market, and they want to get the deal done with more money in your pocket. That's their deal. No gimmicks, just results. It's the Nextdoor Home Group, proud sponsors of the Nextdoor Home Group hotline, 865-546-8200. Up first, this segment is Josh. Josh, what's up, buddy?
Hey, Nate, Houston. How you guys?
Morning, Josh.
I would ask, is there any team outside the Southeast that can be elite anymore?
Yes. I think Ohio State can be. I think Michigan has the potential. I think Texas, unless you want to count Texas as the Southeast. I'd say throw USC in there.
Well, we've said Oklahoma will be if they like win Oklahoma this year.
Yeah, I think there's a couple.
Texas A&M.
If you look at who's actually won a national championship, though, in the last 12 years, mm-hmm. there's only been one team outside the Southeast that's won it, and that's Ohio State. And I would argue now football in the Southeast even better than it was when Ohio State won it that year.
I would agree.
I think the Texas area is actually the best odds. I kind of agree with you, Josh. I think the Midwest is losing ground every year. And I think the Texas and surrounding area and the Southeast is
look
is
at Kentucky, man. Like Kentucky won 10 games last year and they did it by stealing all the players from Ohio.
Yeah, from Ohio.
And like so those guys that could have potentially gone to Ohio State and Michigan, like they're going to Kentucky now because it's the Southeastern Conference. It's big time football.
One more thing, I would say, if you look at the teams like Clemson, to me right now this year, Clemson, Alabama, and Georgia, one of those three is going to win it, in my opinion.
I would be very stressed if I had to take the field in that bet, Josh.
And if you look at their rosters to narrow it down even further, those players are coming from Metro Atlanta.
Yeah, I mean, there's a handful of elites that don't. Like Tua, obviously, not from the Southeast, but now, I mean, his whole family moved there. But, yeah, like, those. I would love to see a regional breakdown of, like, those three rosters. Like, what states and how many outliers are there of the Southeastern Conference footprint? But you're right. I mean, Metro Atlanta has been very kind to Clemson, Georgia, and obviously Alabama in the last, you know, four or five recruiting cycles.
And to talk just a little bit about where this comes from, this elite, that article that moron wrote yesterday saying that we can't be elite again. If you look at Clemson right now, basically Clemson turned into us.
Yep.
They got Taj Boyd, which we was going to get. Dabo was smart enough to hire Dan Brooks and Marion Hobby, who turned their defensive line into just a first rounder after first rounder, which are two Tennessee guys, you know. I mean,
they had Kevin Steele for a while.
Yeah, to say we can't be elite again, that's the stupidest thing I ever heard, man.
No, it's, and that's what I'm saying. Like Tennessee has the finite skills, right? Like you have to have this as far as, you know, finances and facilities and footprint. Like Tennessee has those. They have the baseline covered for, can you win a national championship here? Yes, but it takes good leadership. It takes a commitment to football. It takes a great coaching staff, and we just haven't had those things for a long, long time.
I think what it takes to get it turned is a great quarterback. And if you look at those three teams that are going to win it this year, one of those three, I believe, they all got great quarterbacks. And we got one coming from Metro Atlanta, the same place Trevor Lawrence come from.
I see what you're doing.
Who should be here, whose parents are Tennessee to the core. Yeah. You know, I mean, I think we're going to be elite again. It's just if we can ever get the leadership and administration all over there not being a bunch of bumbling idiots and just get out of the way and let football people run it. We can be elite again. There's no reason we can't. But anyway, Hey, good show, guys. Y'all take care. See you.
Thanks, Josh. Appreciate it.
I'm looking at Clemson's roster right now.
Is it just like Georgia, Georgia, South Carolina, Georgia, Georgia, Alabama, North Carolina,
I'm
Florida?
I'm not counting. It feels like it's South Carolina 1. Now, the problem with that is a lot of these guys that are South Carolina, they're gonna have more of their walk-ons are going to be from in-state than any other place. So I'm kind
of
looking at all.
And more of your filler players, I guess. Right. Not that they really have had that many lately.
That's true. Remember when they're playing their third string, whatever? Anyway, it looks like it's South Carolina 1. It's Georgia 2, easily. There's a lot of North Carolina and Tennessee, Alabama.
Tennessee.
And then you just got the sprinkles. I mean, it's like, you know, like, you know, New York, Maryland, all over, Texas.
Where does South Carolina and Tennessee football
Indiana.
in the high school ranks? Like, how much better is South Carolina high school football than Tennessee?
Okay, the top end of South Carolina football, a lot better. The depth in Tennessee, a whole lot better.
Okay.
So that's the trick.
That's why Clemson comes and steals our top end, and then they get their top end, and they're feeling pretty good about themselves. Yeah.
That's why
Georgia's top end, because they got freaking Trevor Lawrence.
That's why South Carolina, when they were beating number one Alabama, could do it, because they just got the best player in the state for four straight years, and those guys with enough – their roster's the same way. It's mostly Georgia.
Sure, yeah.
After the in-state, after the – you know. North Carolina's really weak. I don't know why that is.
What's the drive from Clemson to Atlanta? Isn't it like an hour and a half?
Right down 85.
Is it even an hour and a half? It's nothing.
I mean, the trickiest part's getting from Clemson to the interstate. Yeah, it's not.
Well, you know what I'm saying. Like, from the exit to Atlanta is nothing. I mean, it makes perfect sense. I mean, I would, if I was Dabo, that would have been my plan. Just stake down in Atlanta.
2 hours.
2 hours. That's, I mean, that's
one
insane.
Hour and 58 minutes.
I mean, but, like, don't get me wrong. Like, that's obviously closer than Knoxville. But, I mean, not Tennessee's geographical footprint and location is fantastic.
It's always been good.
Yeah. I mean,
Philip Fulmer, he raided South Carolina when South Carolina and Clemson were both down.
Right.
And so he got a few good players from there. He got a lot of good players from Georgia. He got a couple guys from Tennessee. He got a couple guys from California and Ohio, and then all the sprinkles, as we'll call them.
That's the key. I mean,
and you're loaded.
That's what Tennessee, when they're at their best, they're punching Georgia and South Carolina backwards, because they're taking the top talent. They're obviously keeping Tennessee guys home, and then they're going to Virginia. They're going into Ohio. They're going into California, and a couple from
Texas.
They've
got some guys from Michigan before. Yeah.
Yep. And you just, like, that, I guess that's the thing. But where Tennessee is, they're able to do that, I think, a little. Like, it's probably a lot easier, frankly, to go get a kid from Virginia to bring him to Knoxville than it is to get a kid from Virginia and take him to Miami, depending on the kid, I suppose. But I'm just saying, like, Tennessee can have success recruiting nationally. It makes sense. But they have to be able to recruit the surrounding areas, and they're in a really good location as far as surrounding areas. They're just – what makes it tough now is Tennessee used to go into South Carolina, and South Carolina and Clemson were not competitors. So you go into South Carolina, you're recruiting Albert Haynesworth, but it's like South Carolina, Tennessee, and then obviously like an Alabama or a Florida. And you're able to kind of compete with the other out-of-state schools and one-up them in the recruiting cycle. Now you've got that home state draw for a kid from South Carolina that's a lot stronger than it used to be.
And you go in the South Carolina weight room, and it looks just like the Tennessee weight
room. Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, they're better, and you don't have the advantages that you have, which is, I think, what I led the show with. Like, you don't have the coaching advantages, and you certainly don't have the recent success advantages and the facilities advantages, because everybody's caught up to everybody else.
Well, Billy sent us that thing a while back where the dude had said, this is what college recruits feel about how good the programs are. And of course, Tennessee way down the board from where we consider Tennessee, if you were, you know, around in the 90s and saw how good they were. Whiskey Jim says, the definition of elite you guys are using makes it seem like Tennessee was never elite, just lucky 1 year.
I feel like the way you define elite, Tennessee would fall in that category. Houston, it would just kind of depend on what sample size of what years that you would pick from that?
Yeah, I mean, I would say the run from 96, 7, 8, 9, maybe, or maybe 95, 6, 7, 8, 9. That was an elite run. You got a title. You won 10 games a year. And then,
yeah, after 95 to 2001.
After that, okay. I was just going a five-year stretch because, you know, you had a down year or two. But
yeah, if you want to go 5 years, just go 95 to 99.
Yeah,
but 99
was that was an elite stretch. I mean you were losing like one game a year. The 90s, I can't remember which season that was. You beat Ohio State in the Citrus Bowl. Like, you were winning big games. A lot.
You finished in the top 10 every year from 95 to 99.
That's an elite run.
And you won a national championship.
Maybe that's...
You got to be top 10 every year and win a natty. Or, like, if you have one year where you finish 16th, but you win two natties, that could count.
Yeah, yeah.
Something like that. I don't know.
The qualifier. The up bar. But...
Yeah, and it basically just ended in 2001. Like, Nick Saban with LSU, you hit Rohan Davey, you hurt him, and it just all fell apart right there.
That was...
I mean, if you win another national title, 2001, or at least play for it and lose to a really good Miami team, mm-hmm. like, I was looking at the list of Miami season.
That was a good Miami team.
Miami was elite at the beginning of the 90s
They came into Neyland the next year and absolutely, I mean, that 2002 team was not the 2001 team, but man, that Miami team in 2002 was good too. They smoked us. But I think the 2001 team might have been Philip Fulmer's best. They just got... Really, their two losses were incredibly unlucky. The Georgia game, you hit the screen pass or the flare pass to Stevens. He goes like 75 yards for the touchdown. I'll never forget this. People forget because they just remember the drive that David Green led Georgia on. It was windy that day, and Leonard Scott had to hold the ball for the kickoff. Hmm. And he lifted his finger right before the guy kicked it. The ball rolled off the tee. He kicked it while it was on the ground because he had already started the swing.
Mm-hmm.
That I don't think that was a called squib kick from Philip Fulmer.
Wait, is this the
2001 Georgia game?
Is that the that's the fullback
hobnail boot? Yeah. That drive started because everyone was like, "Oh, we squib kicked." I'm pretty sure if you go back and watch, Leonard Scott lifted his finger off the ball, and I can't remember who was kicking, kicked it anyway, and that's why it squibbed. And then obviously they hit the touchdown with like 2 seconds to go. But in that game, you didn't have your best player, Dante Stallworth. He didn't play that game. Broke his wrist against Syracuse. Didn't come back until Alabama with a cast on and had like two touchdowns.
You know when it fell apart for Nebraska? 2001.
When they got hammered by Miami?
Yep. 37-14. They still finished in the top 10 that year, just like Tennessee. And after that, it was all over.
It's weird that the programs kind of died at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
How about that? It's also the rise of Nick Saban. Shouts out.
We'll come back with more. I've got more thoughts on Nebraska and Notre Dame and that kind of stuff. You had some good ways to think about that during the break. Want to get to that next. Stick with us right here. Fan Run Radio rolls on. In the shape of an L on her forehead. Well, the years start coming and they don't stop coming. Fed to the rules. Welcome back into the Fan Run Studios, Fox Sports Knoxville. Trying to find some national championship teams that... We're not elite in five or 10-year windows. I guess Colorado, and they may have shared this one like 1990. You could debate that one a little bit, although, I don't know, McCartney even went 11-1 his last year in 94, so if you take a six-year window, you could probably still make the case there. I mean, usually, if you're winning a national championship, you're going to be pretty good on the front end and the back, at least on the back end, because you're going to use that to acquire even better talent.
David Ubbin of The Athletic has just released an article.
Oh, he took a big shot at Hayes yesterday.
Yes,
I mean,
he did.
Major subtweet, fire extinguishing verbiage. It was great.
It's funny. His teaser for the article was, "Can Tennessee ever truly be elite again?" He has a four pillars to success. As far as what elite programs inherently have.
I think it's funny he took a shot at the guy and then he kind of piggybacked off to get his own clicks. But, you know, that's the job.
He took shots because the guy didn't have any, like...
Right.
There was no data. There was no basis on his theory other than they're bad now. So, ha. Gotcha. Mm. So, we've been talking, right? Like, what do elite schools typically have? Right? Like, to be elite and stay elite, what do you have to have? This is one I say all the time. Finances, right?
Yep.
That's one of David's. Money and donations. Resources, resources, resources. Facilities. Big salaries for coaches, head coaches, and assistants. And you better have money for, you know, they're updating the cafeteria, Jeremy Pruitt said. They added two full practice fields to the complex. They redid the training room for Fitzgerald. They've got a new smoothie machine, whatever, all this stuff. You've got to have the up-to-date stuff and money to buy it. Fan support. I'm not even going to talk about this. Got it, especially when you're good. Now, you're starting to lose some of those fans, but if you start to win at all, they're right back filling the stadium. That's not a problem. Strong coaching staff and support staff. This is the one Tennessee has not had for a very, very long time. You can get it if you know what to look for. Hopefully, Philip Fulmer knows what to look for. And talent. Talent to me is a obviously he's right, but I think it's easier to get talent if you have the correct geography. So Tennessee's geography should allow them to get the correct and necessary talent to be elite again. If those are his four pillars, I think Tennessee checks the boxes. We saw Butch Jones recruit like a madman, and the guy was a bumbling idiot.
Had the players. 2015 Oklahoma, you're right there. They made the
2015 playoff. 2015 and 16. You were right there.
It was.
You were right there, roster top to bottom, with the Alabamas, with the Clemsons. You were right there.
You needed to stay healthier. You needed to call better games. You needed to develop those players better in the offseason so that they were stronger
and executed better. But the guys
themselves were
good enough. Yep. And if he can do that in 2 or 3 years, then a lot of people should be able to. But then that stuff you were talking about goes back to coaching and support staff. That is weight room, that is nutrition, that is training room, that is in game. And I think Tennessee, snapshot right now to where they were 3-4 years ago, a lot better in all of those departments, all of them, not to mention the upgrade to facilities. So yeah, I think, again, I think Tennessee, I mean, I know people don't want to hear it, and Josh just said it and he's dead right. I tweeted this out I don't want to really go back and find the tweet because it's just depressing, but I tweeted it out before Clemson won their first national championship. I was like, Clemson is Tennessee. Like, 5 years ago, 6-7 years ago, they were Tennessee in the 90s before they won their national championship. Then now they've won it, and here's the thing. They've sustained it longer than Tennessee did.
Yeah, I mean,
that's the key.
Phil Fulmer couldn't beat Steve Spurrier. Somebody said the other day, if Steve Spurrier's not in the league right then,
mm-hmm.
I mean...
Well, you couldn't beat Steve Spurrier, and then when you finally did, there's Nick Saban in Atlanta waiting for you. Like, that's tough. And that's not necessarily Phil's fault, but, I mean, I don't think anyone would disagree to say, top to bottom, Steve Spurrier and Nick Saban, probably a better coach than Philip Fulmer.
Yeah, I mean, it's just true.
I love Phil, but those two guys being in the league when they were, like Spurrier in his heyday at Florida, right when you're in your heyday, it's difficult when he's a slightly better coach. Doing things that are different than everybody else, too. Like, but that's what made him better.
Especially on game day. Yeah, he's a better coach on game day.
Yeah, like, as far as, like, managing a program and motivating and recruiting, probably about even. Well, but what he did was so different that it made him better on game day.
We talked about it. Every time those teams would roll into the game at the same level. Like, if you're rating them in Madden...
Mm-hmm.
Same level of team, and just you know, one performed better on game day. You know, for the majority of those times. I'm looking at Urban's deal. What about Nebraska and Notre Dame? We all agree that it's harder for them. I mean, do you think they can do it though? You mentioned Urban Meyer at Notre Dame.
Well, here's my theory. Certain coaches can attract things on the four-pillar list that David has, right? Like, if your university, I mean, Steve Spurrier did it at South Carolina.
Yeah, sure.
They hire him, and he's like, we got to get some more money rolling in here. Money starts flowing in. It's weird that Lou Holtz couldn't do that, frankly.
No, he did. South Carolina was, I mean, they lost all their cupcake games Holtz's first year. That's how bad. They were 0-11. Think about that. 0-11.
It's tough.
The next year they went 8-4 and beat Ohio State in the Outback Bowl.
Right.
So like I think Lou Holtz did it, and then but it was so bad that then it was another step for Spurrier.
Gotcha. Anyway. So inherently I think universities let's say the score to be elite is 100. Like, you, if you're going to be elite, you have to score 100 on my fake scale of elite, okay, eliteness. Like, yeah, you have to reach the level 100. That is not the maximum level, but you have to be 100 to be elite. I think certain schools, through history, geography, whatever, have higher inherent numbers to start with. Like, your baseline is already higher. For example, Alabama, with their rich history, we know how serious they take football. We know their fan support is really, really good. Like, Alabama's probably, like, already at a 65 as a university. If you hire Mike Shula, he gets you up to, like, a 78. If you hire Nick Saban, who's probably, like, a 75 himself, you now have a 150 score on the elite level. Which, by the way, makes it much harder for anyone else to even look elite, right? Because you're so far ahead. Dabo at Clemson is a weird one. Like, they've kind of both raised, like, since they've been there. Like, Dabo made Clemson more relevant, and then Clemson, the university, started to take football more seriously, which kind of raises their inherent score. Like, none of these are static at all times, right? But you have the geography, so that's going to help Clemson. Notre Dame, because of footprint, is a little bit lower. And I don't hate Brian Kelly as a coach. I don't like him as a person. I don't think Brian Kelly is an elite football coach. But if you took Nick Saban and put him at Notre Dame, I'm not saying they're Alabama, but they're still going to be one of the best teams in college football and probably going to win a few national championships. Like, I think LSU has a high inherent score. And when Nick Saban was there, he probably would have won a ton of national championships. Les Miles won a couple national championships there. I don't think Les Miles is some elite level, crazy all-time. I mean, he's an all-time really good coach, don't get me wrong, but he's not Nick Saban. I just think certain schools have a higher inherent score, and if you get the right coach, you get above the marker of being good, great, to elite. I think Philip Fulmer, at the time in the 90s, had Tennessee to an elite level, but again, everyone else can kind of, like, when Florida's really, really good and they jump up, you might still be elite, but they're over the score of 100 if you're at 100. So Urban Meyer at Notre Dame, in my opinion, could get Notre Dame to an elite level. Nick Saban at Notre Dame could get Notre Dame to an elite level. We'll see about Scott Frost in Nebraska. Like, I'll be honest, though, I don't know if Urban Meyer could go to Nebraska and win a national championship. Like, I don't know about Nebraska. I think Nebraska is a tough...
You know what's funny?
It's a tough one to pick.
I don't remember what year it was, but there was a year where Nebraska was getting blasted in whatever bowl game was the de facto national championship. I feel like it was Miami putting it on them. I may have to look this up later. But the announcers went on and on in the third and fourth quarter of a game that was a blowout, so they're just trying to find anything to talk about. It was supposed to be this massive game, mm-hmm, yada, yada. And they kept talking about how, yeah, you know, in the state of Nebraska, football's just not what it is in the state of Florida, or what, you know, yada, yada, yada. They play, you know, in Nebraska, they're still getting kids that are playing 7-man football, 8-man football at these small towns because they don't even have enough kids to make full 11-man football teams, yada, mm-hmm, yada. I want to say it was like the year now, the next year or 2 years, where Nebraska's absolutely whooping people's ass. And I'm like, oh, yeah, it helps to be in Miami, Florida. But you still only need about 15 really good players a year. Like, if Scott Frost is able to expand their recruiting footprint, if all of a sudden he's pulling guys from Texas,
well, and that, but that's the
and
thing,
from
right?
Michigan and from whatever.
It's all about Scott Frost and, like, his score.
It's how can you get those players.
Right.
And like you said, you're more connected than ever.
Mm-hmm.
You just
but
you
every, have to, everybody's more connected than ever.
I mean, people are saying, like, you know, if Haynes King was in Georgia, he probably comes to Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
That distance became a factor
late
once they really started talking about, oh, man, Dad does have to coach every Friday night. And if I'm starting on Saturday at 3:30.
That's an easy sell.
You know?
And Jimbo Fisher's really, really good. If that was still Kevin Sumlin, it might not be as easy of a sell. Like, but Jimbo Fisher, a higher kind of score as far as this elite level.
But if anybody can do it at Nebraska, it's going to be Scott Frost, who was the quarterback whooping everybody's ass with a bunch of guys that played 8-man football in high school.
Yeah, I mean, there's knowledge, right?
He sent his entire staff and got some massive defensive lineman, some 4- or 5-star guy that Alabama really wanted. So if you can repeat that about six times a year and then win the next eight guys on your list mm-hmm. from the Oklahomas and Texases of the world, then Nebraska could be back.
But it's a really good time for Nebraska, too. With Urban, yeah, with Urban gone and Harbaugh kind of like I'm just saying, look at the rest of the Big Ten. Mm-hmm. Like Iowa's going to be a trouble game for a while until you get your talent above them, just because Kirk Ferentz is a pretty good coach. But really, if you look at Scott Frost, he should be able to win in the regular season pretty quickly and get to that 9, 10, 11 regular season win number. The question for me, though, is then what happens when he meets Alabama, when he meets Clemson, when he meets Oklahoma? Does he match up with those types of schools at the level they're at now? See, it's easier for him to win, you know, 10 in the regular season, but I think it's easier for Tennessee to build a team that could beat Alabama or Clemson, but it's going to be much harder for Tennessee to win 10 in the regular season just because the SEC is just so good. So it's weird, right? Like it's a weird challenge at both places, even though the goal is the same. But I think if you're talking about things that are inherent, I think Tennessee is ahead of. And I'm talking if you wipe the slate clean, like forget the last 10 years, forget history. If you just blanked everyone's mind and started football again today, I think Tennessee is in a better spot than Notre Dame and Nebraska as far as becoming elite again. I'm not saying it's going to happen.
I mean, that may be true. I think it's funny that Tennessee fans all think that they're way ahead of Nebraska, where Nebraska's won a whole lot more than Tennessee has the last 15 years. It's pretty crazy.
What do you mean way ahead?
What you just said, Tennessee fans say Nebraska will never be elite again. But
I'm not saying they'll never be elite
yesterday
again.
I heard that a lot. They were like, well, wait, Tennessee's in the Southeast.
I think Nebraska's had good coaches. Like, I think Callahan and Pelini are good coaches. I just think it's tough at Nebraska. And so Scott Frost, who we know is a good coach, is he enough, you know, is he that much better than these other good coaches they've had that instead of winning 8-9 games, he's going to get them to 10-11 or an undefeated season where you're winning a national championship? And I think Josh made a really good point. Quarterback, you better have a good one. You know, everyone knocks the game manager kind of way that Alabama won a couple. Like, McElroy and A.J. McCarron in college, especially with what they were surrounded with, were perfect for what they had to do with those types of defenses. But look at Trevor Lawrence. Look at Tua. Look at what Lincoln Riley's done at Oklahoma, back-to-back Heisman. And people are saying right now, you better look out for Hurts to be the third. You better have a good quarterback.
And a system that features them.
Yeah.
You know, a system that allows them to play off the defense. It's old. To me, you know, you had the triple option wishbone era where could your quarterback make running decisions faster than the defense could challenge him? And, you know, when Notre Dame has Tony Rice who can either give it to the fullback, keep it himself, or pitch it to the guy faster than the linebackers can react, oh boy, you're undefeated. Now it's all of that those same decisions, but all in the pass game. Numbers are better here, throw it here. Numbers are better here, throw it here. Numbers are better in the box, hand it off. Numbers are better in the box. Fake the handoff. Keep it for a second. Now throw it out there. It all goes back to the trigger man on some level.
So we got to start cheating and getting these guys.
Let's do it.
That's what Clemson did.
Yeah.
Maybe Dabo knows about it. Maybe he doesn't. Man, Clemson, like I said, Clemson took football seriously. They decided to, right? Starting in about the 2003, 4, 5-ish, they said, you know what? We should probably take this football thing pretty seriously. And they started getting the players. And slowly but surely, they started building these teams. And instead of winning 6 and 7 games, you're winning 8 and 9. Then instead of winning 8 and 9, you're winning 9, 10. And then you get the right coach at the right time with the right roster and the right kind of trajectory. And look what they've got. But it does. It starts with players. Like, you can have the best coaching brain in the world. You can be the smartest guy. To be elite, you're still going to have a few of those guys. And by few, I mean, I think your number of like 15 on the roster of just like elite players, it's probably about right. Like, over a 2-year stretch, you better have 15 or 20 guys that are just really, really damn good. Like, all conference level or higher.
Yeah, and then another level, about the same amount of guys that aren't liabilities, you know?
Right, and that's the one thing you can't have is, you know, a left tackle who can't block a soul.
Yeah.
But that goes into coaching too, as far as stacking your roster in a way that doesn't just open up weaknesses in 2 years, right? It's having a replacement. It's having guys who are ready. I was watching the Paul Feinbaum show yesterday. I thought this was really interesting. So Dabo in, I can't remember which game it was. It might have even been on the same weekend. Against Tennessee last year, I can't remember what the score, what was Tennessee-Alabama game score? It was never close. Wasn't it like 37-7, something like that?
Wait, which matchup?
Tennessee-Alabama. Do you remember the score from last year?
No.
Nick Saban played 47 players in that game. Now, this is an away game, so you only travel with 70 in the SEC.
Okay.
What was the score, Billy?
58-21.
What was the score at the end of the third quarter? Do you have that one? No? Okay. I mean, the game was never, ever close, right?
Right. Sure.
Nick Saban played 46 players. Dabo Swinney, I think on the same day, played a cupcake. I can't remember who it was. They were at home. They played some garbage team, beat them by a million. Dabo played 84 players. 84 guys. I thought that was a really interesting, like, kind of look at preparing guys and keeping them motivated. Like, Saban's whole thing is, if you don't practice the right way, if I can't trust you to go out there and do it the exact right way, you're just not going to see the field. You got to earn it in practice. And Dabo's thing is like, hey, we're up 50. I'm going to give some guys a break. I'm going to go out there and let you make mistakes, and then I can show you in the film room the mistakes that you made, but at least you think you're going to get to play, and you are going to get to play, as like a keep you motivated, get you prepared, instead of, yeah, you're not one of my top 46 guys this week. There's no chance you're seeing
the field.
No one
scored in the fourth quarter with Alabama, Tennessee.
Yeah.
So it was 50.
So he played 46 guys. Essentially, and think about, you know, that's however many special teams.
So he had 15 minutes to get in.
Everybody.
However many more they had dressed that were available.
Well, they had at least 24 guys there that theoretically could have, right? I don't know how many, a couple of injuries or whatever. But I thought that was an amazing stat. Like, because for a home game, I think the home team can dress, is it 95?
I think it's per conference. Like in a conference, I think in an SEC game, even if you're the home team, you can't dress as many as you can for, I think you dress as many as you want for
out of conference.
Yeah, when we play Georgia State here.
So Dabo's game was an out of conference game, if I'm not mistaken. It was a cupcake. But he played 84 guys. Like, that's insane to me.
Wasn't he playing third and fourth string guys in the championship game after they had put Alabama away?
Probably.
Why wouldn't Nick Saban want to get some of those loyal practice dummies in against Tennessee to say, hey, I got to play? You know?
That's the thing, because he's up 40, but he doesn't like what he sees because it was actually a Feinbaum caller, the first intelligent one I've heard, saying, well, Nick Saban doesn't care about the score. He's not watching the score.
Clemson played NC State that game. 141-7.
That's what it was, because it was a conference game.
It was NC State.
Yep.
So it was the same day.
Yeah.
And what was the score of that one?
41-7.
Again, I mean, Tennessee scores 21. I mean, the games were never in doubt for either of those teams. The difference is Dabo got his starters a lot of rest.
Yeah.
And then played the backups and the deep backups. And I thought it was an interesting point. Like, that's going to motivate them because they go into any game thinking, okay, I know I'm fourth string, but I could play today.
Yeah.
I better practice hard so that maybe he picks me third instead of fourth this week. Whereas Alabama, it's like, dude, we're up 50. I'm third string, and I know I'm not going to play today.
Yeah, it was 31-0 going into the fourth quarter.
That's so interesting.
And play out the season. I mean, who peaked at the right time? Exactly. Who played their best game of the year? I was talking to a guy the other day. He's like, I don't know that Trevor Lawrence could play as well as he played in that Alabama game this year. He's like, I'm sure I'll have a great year, but I don't know how he gets any better. Like, he was like game for the ages in that moment. He's like, he's going to have to take a step back just by default.
Yeah. I mean, that got us off of our, like, elite discussion. But I do think it's – like, I don't think there's one way to be elite, if that makes sense. Like, I don't think there's one, like, best practice. I think every situation is different.
You better be good at three, maybe four. You better be good, though, at getting the right players.
Recruiting is –
At then developing in them and putting them in a culture. It can be a business decision like Saban, or more of a, we really care about you and it's fun and come here to Clemson.
But you still have to be able to teach and coach football.
And then you better be able to get it done on game day, in the chess match, in the moment, and the way Clemson schemed for Alabama and overlooked Notre Dame. Like, if Notre Dame had beaten Clemson last year and you had a guy come out and say, yeah, we didn't even game plan for Clemson. We thought we'd play Alabama. I mean, that would have been the most embarrassing thing ever.
Well, I think that's the most embarrassing thing ever for Notre Dame that they,
it is
they
now.
Could say that.
Yeah. Frankly. It is now, and that would have been the exact opposite if
they'd
have lost.
That's why I'm like, Notre Dame's not elite. Like, if a team can skip your game plan in the playoff to focus on the team they're going to play next, you are not elite. Sorry. See you later.
And Dabo just got that right. I mean, that takes balls to say, guys.
You see it every week. A team that has a big game the following week gets upset the week before that big game because I promise you they overlooked a team that was pretty good, thinking they could do what Clemson did to Notre Dame and Alabama.
I mean, Butch Jones and all the other mouth-breathing coaches are like, no, we got to focus on North Texas. Uh-uh. The best coaches do what's best for the team, not what sounds best in a coach cliche, stupid soundbite. And Dabo Swinney said, we got Notre Dame. We'll just run our stuff. We'll beat them. We'll move on. Let's focus on Alabama. And it worked. It was the right call. I mean, that you got to have a guy that's that confident in their own mental ability.
And their team. I mean, you don't think the team felt pretty good about themselves? Hearing, hey, by the way, guys, I know we got Notre Dame in the playoff. We think you guys are good enough to beat Notre Dame with the stuff you already know, so we're going to start some install on Bama this week, and we're going to start watching some Bama film. You don't think that gives these guys like a, oh, man, wow, they really believe in us. They trust us. I mean, you're right, though. It's a double-edged sword. It's dangerous.
Yeah.
It's dangerous. You go into that game and Notre Dame's a little better than you thought, or you get unlucky early, but, man, it worked out for Clemson in a big way.
There's a lot of your reaction on Twitter I want to get to that kind of is tied up in all this, so we'll do that next. If you want to give us a shout on the next door home group hotline, you can, 865-546-8200. Final segment, hour two, next. Final segment, hour number two. We appreciate the feedback. This segment is brought to you by the Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. Check them out online at tvacreditunion.com. They've been helping their members grow financially for 85 years, and they'd love for you to join up with them. tvacreditunion.com is the website, or walk into one of the many Knoxville TVA Employee Credit Union branches. You'll see them. They're the maroon and white ones with a little arrow, you know, moving you upward and forward. It's the official credit union of 3 and Out. I got a lot of reaction here. Want to get to. Appreciate you guys when you guys engage in the shows. Mitchell lives in Nebraska. He said it's crazy to see the similarities between Nebraska and Tennessee. Fans are loyal to a fault.
Yeah.
And people worship Scott Frost here like they do Peyton Manning there. Promising coach with a path to a bright future.
Well, that's the one thing that could be a blessing or a curse for Scott Frost, depending on, well, for Nebraska, is the loyalty that those fans will have to Scott Frost.
Like, yeah, if he fails, it won't be because they
didn't give him enough time
or like, money or
yeah,
whatever.
Like, that's the thing. Like, he's going to have every possible resource the coach could need at their given school. Again, the only issue is that his school is Nebraska and that they are in Lincoln. That's his issue. And that they border, like, Kansas, South Dakota, Iowa. I mean, like that's their issue.
You know how LeBron built a food court at his house? Because, like, if you're LeBron James, you can't exactly just run out and grab some, you know, food real quick.
I would
and
agree
not
with you.
Have to take pictures or get whatever. So he just kind of created, like, everything he would want to do at his own place so he doesn't have to worry about that. That's what I would do if I was Nebraska. I would say, look, we know Lincoln's not great, but our football facility has it all. You're not even going to want to leave.
They should do what Clemson did times like 10.
They should have a water park for those guys.
I'm not. Yeah, that's a good idea, except it gets real cold there in the wintertime. I mean, it's hot tub heated.
Snow tubing. I mean, like just
heat the water.
Build,
just
yeah.
spend the money on a big water heater.
I mean, I would build a resort for football
indoor
players
water park
in Lincoln,
why not?
Nebraska.
No, that's a good idea. I mean, you should. I mean, legitimately though, just turn it into a resort. That's a really interesting
you
idea.
Take a few classes, you practice hard, and then we play hard.
And then you're in the resort.
There you go.
With anything and everything you could possibly need. Like, that's a really good idea. I mean, a lot of these football complexes are kind of becoming
that's
what
they're
you
doing.
Know?
Video
I mean,
game rooms, pool.
Yeah, I mean, it's becoming that. I mean, the dorms they're building for, you know, football now are ridiculous compared to everything else, at least.
Yeah.
I mean, it's smart to do that. But when you're in Nebraska, like you said, you don't have any inherent advantages geographically. Lincoln kind of stinks. You know, Knoxville's a cool city. We got stuff. But if you don't have that stuff, you better make it. Yeah, and you can with the money in football now. So, yeah, I'm with you.
Big Josh says, how many playoffs would Fulmer have been in, though would Peyton have won a national title? I say Fulmer would have multiple titles in today's system.
Interesting. I'd have to go back and look at where Tennessee finished.
And kind of what the other teams were and stuff.
Well, I mean, the year you beat North, well, you lost to Memphis in 96. Like, so that loss with the loss to Florida is going to keep you out. Right? I mean, there's just no way. But at that point, in that point in the season, you probably thought with the loss to Florida, there's no way we could win a national championship anyway. So maybe it's different if you realize, hey, we just got to be one of the four, and we don't have to make the conference championship game to be one of the four.
Just blanket statement, Big Josh. I'm sorry to say this. I don't think the current system would have favored Philip Fulmer. He wasn't very good in big games. He was a better builder. He was a better developer. He was a better recruiter than he was like, man, these two teams are pretty even. That team might be a little more talented. Let me figure out a way to steal this victory. He just wasn't. I mean, I don't think more games with equal talent would have been good for Tennessee. I mean, you should have been able to use Peyton Manning to do something. Like, that should have been your edge, and they
ran into Steve Spurrier.
They were able to use it in all the games where they were pretty much better, and a few of the games when they were equal. But
it was interesting, though, like in 97, you know, you had lost to Florida, but let's say you don't run up against Nebraska. Let's say you get Washington State or Michigan.
Mm.
Does Tennessee split a national championship? Because there was talk that night that if Washington State had beat Michigan and Tennessee beats Nebraska, Tennessee's your – I mean, they're at least claiming a couple –
yeah,
you know, because the way they did it, you know, it was like, oh, well, we're going to name Tennessee the national champ. Like, there was at least a chance you could do that. So if it was Michigan versus Nebraska and you got Washington State and beat them by two touchdowns, is Tennessee your national championship team? Like, if those were the four, depending on how it breaks down as far as one seed through four seed, what happens? Could be interesting. I still think it's probably Nebraska. I think Nebraska was really good that year. Like, really, really good. That was Scott Frost, wasn't it? Hate that guy.
Mm.
Just hate that guy.
TK said, I feel like if your team doesn't make the college football playoffs and the season is considered a failure because of that, then you're probably elite. So he's got Clemson, Bama, Georgia, Oklahoma, Ohio State kind of entering the season right now as elite because their expectations are at the ceiling, which is just another way to think of it.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's the thing. The phrase elite program, elite team, it's going to be different for everybody. And it's going to be different if you look at it today versus over 12 games, over, you know, two seasons, three seasons. Everyone's going to have kind of a different opinion. I've said mine. I think you got to be on a pretty good run, and you got to win a title. But, how do you get back there if you're Tennessee? I think Tennessee's pointed in the right direction. I've said it for a long time. That article did nothing to make me think like, oh, man, that's a really good point. Maybe Tennessee can't be elite again. I mean, sorry, like the team passing their classes is not going to keep you from being elite. Staying eligible is not going to keep you from being elite. So throw that one out the window. The coaching staff is really, really good. I don't think that's an issue right now, other than the top end of how good Jeremy Pruitt can be, right? Like that we don't know. But we have no reason to think he's just some dud, so it's just kind of wait and see. You have an athletic director who cares about football, who has said repeatedly, my number one focus is to get football healthy. You've got the money, you've got the fans, you've got the facilities, you've got the upgrades coming, you've got the footprint. What you can't do is the moment you know or think you should make the move, let's say for Jeremy Pruitt's sake, you can't do what you did to Butch Jones in 17 and just bring him back.
Yeah.
You've got to be moving quickly to find, like John Reed said it a couple years ago, and he's 100% right. Like, we get so caught up in money and like paying all these coaches. I would rather be paying four coaches that I have fired millions of dollars a year if it means I find the right guy 2 years faster to start a run of being elite. Like, cycle through the coaches as fast as you can. The moment you think he might not be the guy, you need to start thinking about firing him, because the worst thing you can do is bring back a coach for 1 year who you know is not the guy. In 2016, we knew Butch Jones was not the guy.
You fire Ron Zook, who's recruited well but can't coach a lick, and Urban Meyer comes in and wins you a couple national championships. If you fire Butch Jones and, you know, Derek Barnett's still on the roster, I know that's – I'm just throwing names out. That may not be the what you could have actually done. But
sure.
You fire Butch Jones when some of those types of guys are still on the roster, and it could be different. It at least would have been easier. At least would have been a little bit better. You at least would have been a year ahead, even if you couldn't parlay that into success.
You had athletic directors who didn't know anything about football.
JT says, hell, we might not have won the 98 national championship if there was a playoff. Yeah, sorry. Sorry to say that, but it's just true.
I don't even know who the four teams would have been at that point after UCLA and Kansas State lost, right?
I mean, you might have got unlucky some other years when you had a better chance to win it, and you got a little lucky that year. It probably balances out.
Ohio State.
You probably win one at least. Either way, no matter what, during that stretch. But, yeah, that's a fair take. We'll come back. We'll kick off hour number three next. Stick with us. It's a Friday edition of 3 and Out.